казала в понеділок, підем разом по барвінок, я прийшов, тебе нема.
Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Right now you're listening to a Ukrainian folk song performed by Boris Sikhon. It's from the soundtrack of a fascinating and heart-wrenching new documentary called Family Portrait in Black and White, which played at Hot Docs and won the top prize for Best Feature Documentary. It's also nominated for a Genie Award this year, Best Documentary. And it opens today in Toronto to be followed by a national tour. It's a movie about a woman in a Ukrainian village who has surrounded herself with a large group of young boys and girls who look a bit different from their neighbors. Well, I'm happy to announce I have Julia Ivanova, the director, here in the studio with me now. Hi, Julia.
Hello.
Let me start with a question about the origin of this documentary. You came across an article in a Russian newspaper about a woman named Olga Nenya who has brought up dozens of kids. She's not the only foster parent in the Ukraine, but what makes Olga different? What attracted your attention about this special case?
Olga Nenya is a unique Ukrainian woman because she doesn't see the color difference in her children. All her children are mixed race Ukrainian. Their mothers are Ukrainian girls, and the fathers were the students from Africa who came to study. And then it might be the result of one-night stand or failed relationship, but the children were abandoned at birth at the orphanages. And Olga collected 17 of them from different orphanages, and she raised them as a foster mother. So I came into the picture when the children were teenagers.
Okay, and what's the difference between her house and a normal foster home?
Actually, in many Ukrainian foster homes, you can see one, two, three mixed-race Ukrainian children because they are very often left at birth because there is still this stigma. If a single Ukrainian girl is raising as a single woman a mixed-race child, she will get lots of dirty looks. So not everybody is that brave, but Olga is brave and she took these children. Of course, they pay the price by having to abide her and following her decisions, and they often disagree with her decisions.
Does she adopt? She calls herself mom, but does she adopt the kids?
In Ukraine, the foster system is different. The children are taken basically at birth. And then they spend all their life till they turn 18 with the same family, with the same foster mother. So for them, she's like a mother. But at the age of 18, they are on their own. And that's the main thing why I disagree with lots of things that Olga did, is because she doesn't allow international adoption. She doesn't allow these children to be adopted. But of course, for your audience, what will be very interesting is that it's a conflict between an authoritarian mother and teenagers.
Okay, so these kids are, to me, they're totally Ukrainian. They're Ukrainian-born, brought up, Ukrainian-speaking, their cultural attitudes, everything seems to be there. And it's their first and only language. But how do they identify themselves? How do others see them?
That's the problem. They identify themselves as 100% Ukrainian. They have no idea who their fathers were. Yeah, the fathers were from Africa, but they know nothing about Africa. So for themselves, they're Ukrainian. But they're mixed race, so they look differently. So from that point of view, the neighbors and the skinheads, they see them as not 100% Ukrainian.
Well, you start the film with images of neo-Nazi skinheads marching in Kiev. And later on, you interview grad students from different parts of Africa who talk about racist attacks and killings, friends of theirs. How big a problem is racist violence in the Ukraine?
In Ukraine, it is a problem because there are many students from Africa. The level of education in Ukraine is pretty high since the Soviet times, but the costs are low. So Many African families send their boys to study in Ukraine. Unfortunately, students from Middle East and Ukraine are dealing with racism on everyday basis. Sometimes it's a violent racism. And there was a petition signed not long time ago, quite recently, by foreign students who demanded the Ukrainian authorities take action against the racism that surrounds them. So these children in the film, right now they're teenagers, and right now they live, 17 of them, in the same village cell. They don't feel racism that much, but when they are on their own at different small places, they will feel it away more.
But are the neo-Nazis or skinheads, are they a daily visible presence, or more every once in a while they show up, or at night, or, I mean...
There are no skinheads that would be daily presence unless there is a sanctioned march once a year, once in several years. But they're vicious. They organize nightly attacks. They are well organized, but it is very difficult to see them. What is more prevalent is invisible racism. It is the fact that they, children and people of different skin color, they are seen as different. So the average citizen of Ukraine will just express a mild form of racism, but it will be pretty constant.
Yeah, people said in the movie, they talk about things like mixing blood or mixing race, which are sort of like, you know, old school terms. But is that very common there, or just among certain groups who would say that?
Well, I would say that Ukraine is not any different than other countries, majority of countries. Canada is unique because in Canada, nobody actually right now cares anymore about any kind of color. And it would be stupid here to care about color. But in the old world, the notion of keeping the traditions is way more prevalent. So from that point of view, people are more concerned about the looks. And Ukraine, if you remember, had a great history of anti-Semitism. So it's not that it's something new for Ukraine. Ukraine and Russia are not very open to people of different color.
In a documentary, it's as much what you put in as what you leave out. So I'm wondering, in the movie, you concentrate mainly on kids at home with their brothers and sisters or when they travel abroad. But do they have friends outside of the family in the village? Or not so much?
Family portraits in black and white follows the family for 3 years. And those who will come to Royal from March 2nd to March 8th will have the joy of seeing this incredibly interesting, very different children. And some of them had lots of friends in the neighborhood. But some of them, especially the intellectual ones, especially the individualistic ones, they had problems with relating with the local kids, to the local kids, because they are different. And being different, it's not only in your color, it's also tells a lot about what you like and what you do. And the main boy in the film, his name is Kirill, he is exceptionally smart and very stubborn, and he's an individualist. So he doesn't have any friends.
So with Kirill, he was estranged from his mother, and he describes her as a little Stalin, a Soviet-era sort of a dictator who declares people should do what they're told, follow her directions. Is this attitude still prevalent in the former Soviet Union? Is it like a desirable culture, or do a lot of people want to go out on their own, follow their, express their self, do what they want, become what they want? Or is it like both at the same time?
In former Soviet Union, the generational gap right now and clash maybe is more vivid than in Canada, because the parents, they belong to the generation when the collective interest was taught and encouraged. While younger generation grows in capitalist society and they are way more individualistic. So Olga, being a foster mother, she believes that in a big family there is no space for democracy. But her children, some of them especially, they believe in the personal pursuit of happiness and their own path and their own decisions. And unfortunately, those children who are the most talented and the most interesting and bright, they are the ones that Olga cannot deal with, and she tries to crash them, crash their will and individuality.
I'm speaking with Julia Ivanova about her new documentary, Family Portrait in Black and White, that opens today in Toronto. In one of the saddest cases in the movie, one of the kids, a young kid, is put into a special school for children with mental disabilities, and he's separated from the woman he calls mom, and all his foster brothers and sisters. But to me, looked just like a normal ADD kid. How does the education system work in Ukraine? Is there a mainstreaming or isolation?
Isolation, for sure. You are very right. There is a boy in the film, and he was actually one of the smartest ones because I could talk to him, I could interview him. He was very logical, but he has learning disability because he cannot concentrate, and also he is dyslexic. So he was sent to the school for mentally challenged children. And he has been there for many, many years, and he's surrounded by children that are not on his level, and he's not encouraged to study. But furthermore, because he doesn't accept the conditions where he lives, the conditions meaning being separated from his foster mother and from his brothers and sisters, he rebels, and sometimes he behaves not the way it is expected in the school, and he was placed at the mental institution for a month where he was subjected to torture, serious torture, real torture. And my film ends with his story because he was crushed by the system, and the system didn't even notice the fact that it crushed him.
I haven't seen many other movies or documentaries set in present-day Ukraine. So some of the images are arresting to me. There's traditional dancers dressed with embroidered tops and then red vinyl skirts. And there's this strange goose-stepping patriotic festivals. There are people who walk around the village like almost naked. It's not my vision of Ukraine at all. Is this a fair cross-section portrait of contemporary Ukraine, or were you trying for images that grab attention?
I don't know where you saw people walking naked. It was just one morning on Saturday, and beer was sold in the nearby store, so the guys bought a couple bottles of beer, and it was hot, so they were not wearing shirts.
Right, right.
So it's
no, no, the neighbor who just wears his underwear walking
yes,
around outside.
Yes, like, yeah. But it's a rural Ukraine.
Right.
It just in every film, you have to maintain some sort of humor. So everything that had humor in it, of course, I kept. But also, it's a film about teenagers, and they have joy of life. They are funny. It doesn't matter that there are racist neighbors. These racist neighbors are old farts, and these guys are young, and they have a future ahead of them. So I wouldn't want to show just grim, gray Ukraine. It's not the truth. When you are young and you are a teenager, doesn't matter where you live. It's a joyful time.
What is the origin of your fascination with orphans? You've done a few movies on the same topic. Is this based on a personal connection or things you've observed?
I came to Canada in 1995 from Moscow, and for several years I worked as an adoption coordinator, and that's how I became a huge fan of international adoption. And in this film, Family Portrait in Black and White, people can see the story about Italy. Because some of these kids go to France and Italy, and they spend summers in Italy. But one of the stories, when a wonderful man is bringing the boy year after year to Italy, he cannot adopt this boy because he's a single man. And according to the international, let's say, rules, almost no countries allow a single man to adopt because they put it is loving a child and being a single man for them is like a crime. A woman, for some reason, can love a child, but a man, for sure, has no business of loving a child if he is not married. And I personally disagree with that. Olga, the foster mother, she is a great woman, but she believes that foreigners adopt children for organs. And for some time, I thought she is pretending. But then I thought about the fact that she never traveled. She was raised in Ukraine. It was Soviet Ukraine. So she has some ideas that to me would seem completely absurd, but she believes in them.
So you spent at least, you spent 3 years shooting this movie for a portion each year, I mean over a 3-year period. Do you think your presence with a camera around these kids change their own self-image or how they're treated by neighbors?
No, I don't think I influence them this way, but definitely I'm trying to help them, and I admired them, and they could feel that I admired them, and the kids were so interesting and so alive and colorful that I think they changed my life more than I changed their life.
So, Julia, do you have any last words about the movie you'd like to say?
Yeah, I think this movie would be very interesting for the students because it would remind them their relations with their mothers. Because our mothers were not perfect either. And the main conflict in this film is between teenagers and the mother. So that's why it's interesting. And I would encourage you to come and see the film for yourself. It was premiered at Sundance. It won Hot Dogs. It won many festivals, played all over the world. Now it is nominated for Genius Award. And it is playing at Royal, at the Royal Cinema, March 2nd, March 8th. And that's it. That's your only chance.
Okay. Thanks so much for talking with me this morning. Julia Ivanova is a documentary filmmaker's newest feature, Family Portrait in Black and White, is nominated for a Genie Award, and it opens today in Toronto. This is Daniel Garber, the movies for CIUT 89.5 FM and CulturalMining.com.